All right, good morning, church. So, going back to the message of hope, we heard a little bit of that in our communion message. I used to go to my grandparents' house a lot, and my grandfather would always be watching the news, and I remember I really hated it because I wanted to watch something else. I wanted to watch a show or cartoons or something. And he'd be like, oh no, we got the local news, and then we got the national, and then this, and then, and it seemed like the whole evening would be the news. And now I find myself, especially with social media and the internet, I'm doing kind of the same thing, but probably worse. Being bombarded by a lot of things we see happening in the world. There are a lot of things I see, I'm pretty sure a lot of y'all see as well. But just things that don't look very hopeful. They look very hopeless. We see news reports of slaughter of people all over the world, Christians especially. Probably hands down the most persecuted faith on the planet. And we see the betrayal of our leaders. So we entrust power to the leaders. We let them to do one thing, they do the opposite. Or if we vote for a policy they said would work, and we said, no, that's not working the way you said it would. Oh, well, just more power, more money, and then that'll take care of it, right? Give us more power, more money, and then that'll be fixed. That'll make it better. So there's that, and then we've got elites, intellectuals that promote destruction of the family. You know, spouses should cheat on each other because then it'll save their marriage. And all kinds of alternative lifestyles that don't really work, and for a thriving society at least. So a lot of things like that, and then you wonder, man, what's the point? What difference am I going to make as a Christian, as a believer? It's just hopeless. I shouldn't anything. So what I want to take y'all back to is to Genesis. I don't have any PowerPoints. Sorry, I didn't prepare any PowerPoints, but just going to look at a couple of chapters in Genesis. And I got one of the Bibles I got free out there in the lobby in the foyer, so if y'all need a Bible, I got mine here from that table. So Genesis chapter 18. So this has some really, really good news in it, and then it has some bad news. So some really good news for Abraham. So the title of this chapter, the heading is The Three Visitors. And so going back to like the Godhead three in one, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So you see there's a lot of examples in the Bible that come in threes. So it's kind of fun to look for those. So three is often thought of as being like a form of signifying completeness, divine perfection, witness, putting emphasis on things. You also see it in grammar of some languages, when three is used. So we've got the three strangers, we've got the Godhead three in one, and then in some other places in the Bible we have the transfiguration of Jesus. And when he appears with Moses and Elijah, so that was another one. We've got the three wise men appearing at the birth of Christ. The common mention of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob together. And those are just a few examples. And then we've got in Return of the Jedi, we've got Yoda with Anakin and Ben Kenobi. No, that was just that's not in the Bible. All right. So let's read about the three visitors. So the Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them, bowed low to the ground, and he said, If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat, so you may be refreshed, and then go on your way, now that you have come to your servant. And then they replied, very well, do as you say. So Abraham turned into the tent to Sarah. Quick, he said, get 3 seahs of fine flour and knead it and bake some bread. And then he ran to the herd and selected a choice, tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. Where is your wife, Sarah? They asked him. There in the tent. Then the Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. So now Sarah was listening at the entrance of the tent and was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself and thought, after I am worn out and my master is old, I will now have this pleasure. And the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, well, I really have a child now that I'm old? And Sarah lied and said, I did not laugh. And the Lord said, yes, actually, you did. So we have that story, the miracle of Sarah and Abraham having a child in their old age. And a very important event. But then we also have his hospitality of the 3 strangers. And it's kind of interesting as you read this narrative, and then you read what happens after. Some might interpret this because the presence of the Lord was there. Maybe one of the strangers that appeared was God showing himself in the incarnate form, kind of a preview to Jesus. Now, I don't know that for sure. This is just me, Jay Thibodeau, Googling and looking at stuff on the internet. Not really a biblical scholar, but that's an interesting interpretation of it. And like I said, I don't know for sure if that's the way it was, but we know there were 3 strangers, and at the same time, presence of the Lord. And then after the great news, we have some bad news coming. So we have Abraham pleading for Sodom. So when the men got up to leave, they looked down towards Sodom, and Abraham walked along with them to see them on their way. Then the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him. For I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. And then the Lord said, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great and their sin so grievous, but I will go down and see if they have done what they have done is as bad as the outcry that has reached me. If not, I will know. So here we have these towns that are mentioned, and they're often portrayed as being prosperous towns but lawless. So an image that comes to mind from cinema is the movie Tombstone. It's like you got some good people that go to Tombstone, and it's lawless society. But you got some ostensibly good people that are going to move there and try to make a living. So imagine something similar but different, obviously, because it's a lot farther, a long time ago, a lot more ancient. So the men turned away and went towards Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord, and Abraham approached him and said, "Will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? What if there are 50 righteous people in the city? Will you really sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous people in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and the wicked alike. Far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do right?" And surprisingly, the Lord said, "Okay, fine. 50 righteous people? For their sake, I will not destroy it if I find 50. And then I guess he got a little greedy. He says, "Oh, well, he agreed to that real quick. What if I had..." It's kind of like if you somebody wants you to make an offer or say, how much do you want? Like if you're going to get a job, how much do you want to make? What salary? And then they agree to it too quickly. And you're like, "Oh, shoot, maybe I should have gone for more." So apparently Abraham had the same idea. And it's like, "Oh, wow. That was fast. What about 45? And once again, God agreed. "Yeah, okay, for 45, I'll spare the city." And they go back and forth. So you can kind of see him haggling. God doesn't really fight with him. He just says, "Yeah, fine. I'll." And they get down to 10. They settle on 10. So here we have around verse 32. "May the Lord not be angry, but let me speak just once more. What if only 10 can be found there?" And he answered, "For the sake of 10, I will not destroy it." And then he stopped there. He didn't push him any farther. So when the Lord had finished speaking with Abraham, he left, and Abraham returned home. All right. So there we have it, 10. And then we get to the scene in those towns. Two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. And when he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. "My lords," he said, "please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night, and then go your way early in the morning." Okay. So you see both Lot and Abraham showing great reverence to these people by bowing before them. So both men saw something special in these strangers. So. And they said, "No, we're going to spend the night in the town square." But since Lot lived there, he knew all the bad things that happened. So apparently there was a lot of depravity. There's a lot of people who suggest sexual depravity in the towns. But there's probably comprehensive of a lot of other things. But he said, no, please, don't do that. Come stay with me." And so they did go with him and entered his house. This is in chapter 19, verse 3, just in case, because I was kind of reading ahead. "Taking for them bread without yeast, and they ate. And before they had gone to bed, all the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, 'Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out so that we can have illicit relations with them,'" right? I won't go into too much detail. "And Lot went outside to meet them and shut the door behind him and said, 'No, my friends, don't do this thing. Look, I have two daughters who have never been with men. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do whatever you like. But please don't do anything to these men, for they have come under the protection of my roof.'" And so then a lot of people look at that and are like, man, what a horrible thing. What a horrible thing to do. And so many people speculate on why he would do something like that. So it's probably a combination of him maybe recognizing the divine presence in these strangers and also the town rubbing off on him. Kind of, he's been in that town too long, and he's starting to succumb to some of the horrible influence. And so they, once again, they're, get out of our way, they replied. This fellow came here as an alien, and now he wants to play the judge. We'll treat you worse than them. And they kept bringing pressure on Lot and moved forward to break down the door. And then the men inside reached out, pulled Lot back into the house, shut the door. Then they struck the men who were at the door of the house, young and old, with blindness, so that they could not find the door. So that's pretty wild, right? These strangers. So we've already seen that there's reverence being shown by Lot and Abraham. And now they're demonstrating some power where they can blind people. And so however they did that, pretty amazing. So they weren't able to find their way through the door. And then in verse 12, the two men said to Lot, "Do you have anyone else here, son-in-law, sons or daughters, anyone else in the city who belongs to you? Get them out, because we are going to destroy this place. The outcry to the Lord against its people is so great that he has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out, spoke to his sons-in-laws, so the folks who were two men who were going to marry his daughters. And I guess he didn't mention that he had just offered to sacrifice them to he probably didn't mention that, but he said, yeah, this place is going to be destroyed. We need to get out. And they thought he was just joking, so they didn't take him seriously. And then with the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Hurry, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away when the city is punished." So, basically, he takes his family, and they make it out. So him and his wife and his two daughters. But what happens? You've heard probably this story about Lot's wife. I think they even made a little Christian pop music dance out of it, Lot's wife. But they were advised not to look back when they escaped, and Lot's wife stopped and looked back. And so whether she literally turned to salt or the fire that was raining down on the city that was spreading, maybe she stopped too long and looked back and got engulfed in flames, and then maybe she was left as a body of ash. I don't know, but that's pretty crazy. So I guess the emphasis was to get out of the town as quick as possible without hesitation, and she hesitated. All right, and then the story gets a little weirder after that. So we'll stop there as far as the scripture. But what kind of lessons can we take here? So we have these two cities destroyed. Apparently they were rich but depraved, and the sin was just too crazy, too extreme. And so we can draw some parallels with our modern society. There's a lot of wealth, okay, even the ostensibly poor in this country, and in many, many other countries abroad, even the poorest of the poor enjoy a level of luxury that many emperors never had access to, luxury and decadence. And then we've also got lots of sin. I mean, in addition to the hopeless things, we've got, you know, promotion of women, killing their children, parents, mutilating their kids. There's all kinds of things in modern society that we think of ourselves as civilized, but maybe in some ways they're worse, a lot worse than this ancient towns, these ancient cities. Even Jesus makes a reference to Sodom and Gomorrah in Matthew and Mark. So Mark chapter 10, when he's talking to the disciples about when they're going out to witness and carry the message of the gospel, and if they're rejected, okay, well, they're going to be worse than Sodom and Gomorrah one day. So just shake the dust from your feet. But is it really hopeless? I mean, we have a promise in the Bible of destruction of the world. The Master, God, is going to come back. He's going to destroy everything. So should we just give it up? I mean, is it hopeless? I don't think so. I mean, I look at every passing day that we get in this world as just another example of God's grace and forgiveness. So every extra day, because of all the, you know, the bad stuff I mentioned, I've got my own struggles, right? My own sins to contend with, and I'm pretty sure many of you as well. But if you look at the accounting, if we go back to the 10. If I find 10 righteous people, I won't destroy the cities, right? I'll spare them. Well, some of you might not agree with my accounting here, but here's how many I counted. So we have Lot, Lot's wife, Lot's two daughters, the two son-in-laws. So that's 6 so far. Okay, maybe they weren't righteous like the greatest. Maybe they had enough righteousness that they were worth saving. Okay, so maybe I'm going by that standard. And then we've got the 3 strangers. Okay, so it looked like when we read in chapter 19, it looked like one of them had gone away. So we went from 3 to 2. So I'm thinking maybe that third one was God's presence going out into the city and looking at the outcry like he said he was going to do. So that's 9. Okay, maybe you don't agree with the way I've counted them, but I count 9. So if there were just one more, righteous person, that city would have been spared. Okay. So maybe today, right now, there's a lot of things out of my control. They're all in God's control. And God, through free will, is letting a lot of things happen. So maybe let it start with me. Let me try to do something good for someone. Maybe teach my family how to be good disciples, be a good example for them, the best that I can. Let it start with me, because that's the only thing I really can control at this point. So maybe I could be that 10th righteous person. Now, not righteous on my own, but righteous through Christ. Maybe you can be. One of you can be that 10th person to prevent this world from imminent destruction. Okay. And we know it's going to happen, but I believe God's telling us that there's a lot more work to be done, a lot more people to be saved. There's a lot of good to be done in all of this madness. All right. So hopefully I didn't ramble too much, but I would encourage y'all to go back and look at those chapters, because I think it's a good example of God showing grace and being willing to compromise, saying, yeah, there's at least 10 people in this city. So Thank you, and I guess I'll turn it over to the invitation song now.